You were trained in corporate kidnapping, espionage, bank theft, bank fraud, money laundering.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Cyber Inspiration Podcast. My name is Yevgeny. I have been around cybersecurity for the last 20 years, and I have a lot of experience working with a variety of cybersecurity vendors. My main work is vendor consulting and cybersecurity advisory for companies. As part of my passion in technology and cyber, I've been intrigued to learn how a company starts. I started the podcast to understand the thinking process and what motivated people to start their own company. This podcast is affiliated with Security Architecture Podcast. We have Kiara today from Amolyte Analytics to talk about her company and her journey in cybersecurity and in general. Can you please tell us about yourself and the company?
Certainly. Thank you very much for having me here today. It's a pleasure to be a guest. I started Amolyte Analytics, actually started as a management consulting firm in 2006, but morphed into an AI company about 5 years ago, and we went into Pure Cyber in 2018. I'm a serial entrepreneur. This is my fourth company. I hold a double master's degree in finance, corporate finance and entrepreneurship, and certified management consultant designation, and have counseled and worked with startups all over Canada, probably to the tune of at least 2,000 over the course of my career.
So first of all, always happy to have Canadian companies on the show. I have many companies from Israel, from the United States, from Europe, but I'm always happy to talk to a fellow Canadian, and it's good. Before we recorded, we actually spoke about the weather. You're in Calgary, I'm in Toronto. How cold is there? We mentioned about skiing and snowboarding. How great is to kind of collaborate outside of work in different environments. But today we'll talk about the inspiration for you to start the company. 2006, it's a long time. And as you mentioned, something changed along the way. So we're going to go dial back and then come back forward to see what's changed. So tell me what happened in 2005, 2004 that actually gave you the idea to start this company.
Okay. As I said, this is my fourth company. So I'd sold my second company. And early on in my career, I had worked in what would be considered cybersecurity. My first job was with American Express. I worked as a travel consultant and I was cross-trained in financial services. And my job as a junior agent was to take out the garbage, collect the mail, and keep the computers running. So I learned from an early start how to keep and maintain all the computers. And I was fascinated with the RES systems and how communication could happen with machines and machine to machine and people. Being the youngest on the team, the older ladies didn't want to do anything with technology. So I soaked it up. And then I was quickly trained into corporate fraud, where there's money and potential for fraud. There's going to be fraud. So I worked for a credit card, an international credit card company. And so I was trained up in corporate fraud and the ways that criminals use technology and use anything actually in order to rob people of what they have. So I've always had a background. I worked at BDC for a while and RBC in banking. And so of course we were trained in corporate kidnapping, espionage, bank theft, bank fraud, money laundering. All of those things have come with the career of doing business and protecting your business. As technology becomes more advanced, then it becomes more cyber. So the coin cybersecurity really didn't come around for maybe like 8 or 9 years ago. We started to hear cybersecurity as kind of a term that was used. When we specifically went into cyber, we started as an AI company and we were building and trying to raise capital actually in Canada to build secure communications technologies. I had a partner at the time, he was in the military. And he wanted to transfer some of his knowledge into the civilian world and build a world-class Canadian technology company securing communications in streaming media of any kind of streaming data. So that was the genesis of this company, was trying to follow the startup dream, raise capital to build a proof of concept, to get the prototype built, build the technology, and then deploy it around the world. So that was the inspiration.
So let's dial, kind of focus more a bit. You have an idea, you know what you want to do, you can go and try to build it yourself, or you can go and raise money. What was your decision to do during this time?
So we looked at both. So we looked to see if there were strategic investors that we wanted to work with. We're both seasoned executives, so we didn't want just anybody giving money. It wasn't just about a wallet. It was about having somebody with the intelligence to help move the company along. So we kept that kind of in one. And then as we started working it through what the proof of concept looked like, we applied actually for some ideas grants with the Canadian federal government. And we were fortunate actually to succeed and win one called AI for Cyber Defense, where we started building out a proof of concept with our partner, MDA, to secure satellites and drone swarms.
Great. So what happened then? Did you want to hire a team? And I know it's been a long time ago. How hard was to choose the team? How hard was to understand what kind of people you want?
There's a little bit more to it because we got part of the proof of concept done. And before we were awarded the money, COVID came. So we're now into 2020, 2021. And COVID hit and put everything on hold. So the money didn't come to build the team. The money was put on hold. So we didn't end up raising the money to build the product. In fact, we only got the first couple hundred grand and then that was it. There was no more money. So we tried raising capital. We tried finding money. We tried everything we could find and we were unsuccessful in Canada. So the idea died. It just said, we can't raise money. We can't build it. We can't build it in Canada.
So this was 2018, not 2006, correct?
That's right. So no actions. Okay. 2021. So I would say now we're in 2021 and we can't build it. So he can't leave the military to join a civilian life and he has to stay over on that side. And I had to pivot the company and do services. So I pivoted the company and we did services, which is what the company does now. And I found the technology that we were going to build in the United States, got the rights and brought it to Canada. And now we're implementing and selling into Canada. So the good news is that we have excellent technology in the United States that we could buy and bring to Canada. The bad news is that we weren't able to build it in Canada.
But it's an interesting story because you're looking to build something and then you found something already existed and just decided to use it.
Yeah, it didn't exist at the time. Okay. So about the same time that we were thinking of this, there was an American company that was also thinking along the same. So the architecture is different, but the concept is similar. So that technology was used with the Department of Defense and then adapted for civilian use. And so the advisors with this company are the former CTO of the CIA and the former director of South Cloud Security with the FBI. And one of the foremost experts of nation-state-sponsored attacks built the actual architecture and then is now commercializing it. In the US, they were able to raise $5 million. Whereas in Canada, we were not. They raised $5 million. They were able to build it. And then they started to commercialize the technology. And one of the founders, I actually was speaking on a panel with, and it turns out that she's Calgarian. And so we met on a panel in a conference and we started talking and it was a very similar concept, but a different architecture. So I said, hey, I was going to do this. And my head CTO, my head guy, he's off in another world and we can't do it in the commercial setting. So let's partner. And so this summer we formed a partnership and we have an exclusive partnership with XQ and they have a phenomenal product for securing any kind of streaming data. And it's called Zero Trust Data, where each packet of data is encrypted at the packet level. So each piece has an encryption key on each piece of data. So every piece of data needs to be breached in order for the information to be hacked. So they've basically created a breakthrough technology and it's revolutionizing zero trust and it's being integrated and embedded in all kinds of streaming products and IoT devices, email communications, cloud storage. They're great partners and it's an amazing product. And so now we've got a full team that is out commercializing and installing this and implementing this in a lot of tech companies in Canada and a lot of national critical infrastructure companies.
I'm wondering, because you needed to pivot from building a company that creating a product to service company. How was this pivot? And again, how do you back hiring people that you know now need to deliver versus create? Because it's a bit of a different type of people.
It's a totally different kind of people, completely different. So my prior companies were, one was a software development company. So I'm very comfortable building software as a builder, but my other hat, I'm a management consultant. I'm a consultant. So I'm both. I know both types of people and it's very rare that you'll get them in one person. So it's a hybrid. So consultants are consultants. I opened a virtual chief information security officer service, and we do CMMC, SOC 2, NIST, GDPR. So we do all of those assessments, and I'm an approved service provider with the Canadian federal government, National Research Council, IRAP program, and also the CDAP program. So companies can actually get grants in order to help offset some of the costs to build a security program. So we went into building security programs for small, medium-sized businesses, and we use the grants to help offset. And then we also have a deep domain expertise in defense, aerospace, law enforcement, and energy and finance. Those are the areas where we have decades of experience, of industry experience. And then you layer on with the CISO expertise. So all of my chief information security officer consultants all have a minimum of 20 years of enterprise level experience. I don't take anybody with less than. So they come from European and American airlines, banks, companies like Macy's, Walmart, Marvel Comics.
So I'm going to interrupt you here. This is very interesting. And we're going to put aside how smart they are. Okay, we're going to talk about their personality. I have 20 years of experience. I'm pain in the butt. Trust me. I'm not an easy person to manage. I don't like to do hours. You can ask my previous manager. This is why I work for myself right now. I'm not an easy person to manage. I have stuff I want to do in my way. How is to deal and hire these people? Because you know they're smart. They know the good consulting. They know they're going to go well with the customers, but it doesn't mean they're going to take shit from you.
Oh, I don't. So I have it all templated. This is your job and you sign the contract. You get this amount of money for this job and this is what you have to do. And you can say yes or you can say no. If you say yes, you're expected to have it done by this day. You hit this quality standard. And I don't want to hear your stuff back to me about why you didn't get your job done. So I will stay out of your hair, but you make me look good and you service my clients. I won't ride you. I won't tell you what to do, but I will expect you to be very best quality and you service my clients. I want zero client complaints. Do your job. Do it on your schedule. I don't care if you do it 1 hour. I don't care if you do it 16 hours. This is what it pays. You like it? Do it. You don't like it, that's fine. I have 8 other people that will take it. And then it's based on their availability. If they want it, they take it. If they don't want it, they don't take
How
it.
How hard was to create this?
That was hard.
Square it, that says, yes, because you can say this is what I want. People are like, we don't want this. So you needed to figure out the silver bullet that will make sense for you, but also make sense for senior people.
That's right. So I worked very closely with someone and I was very fortunate to have a very senior chief information security officer take me under his wing. I'm a business person with enough security knowledge to be dangerous. So I am not a security professional. I'm a business person. So he's a security professional with enough business knowledge to be dangerous. So between the two of us, we had a full person. So we went and we worked everything out. And he said, okay, let's take all the fat out of the system. And then this is really what you need to do for these parameters, for this money, for these grants, plus the government has its own parameters. So we have to check those boxes. So as long as everything is in here that needs to be in here, we can streamline it. So we make it very easy that the CISO's work, all the admin work is done so that the CISO that comes in, he's doing what he's supposed to be doing. He's doing the high level expert advisory. He's not writing reports and not writing redundant reports and doing things. He's actually doing the guiding and the teaching. And most of the IT managers, they're junior to intermediate. So they love it when the senior guys come in. It's just a nice fit because the senior guys come in, they see themselves 15 or 20 years ago, and they want to help the young guys coming up. And the young guys coming up are completely like fish out of water. They're just like, I don't know what to do. Like, tell me what to do. I'll do it. They are very good workers. They're very bright. They're like, I'm not sure. Is this way? Do I do this? Do I do that? So it works really well because they're advisors then, and they're playing that big brother, big sister role to the young next generation coming up. And so there's a sense of meaningfulness and a sense of satisfaction on both sides. And I really just stay out of it. Unless there's a problem or an issue, I just collect the payment.
Let me understand this part, and I'm wondering, because you mentioned you're a business person, less cyber. Part of this, you actually need to do sales. So talk to me, how do you change your mind to do sales as well? Because I'm guessing in the beginning, you did a lot of sales, probably maybe a bit less right now. But there are still probably sales involved in the big meetings as well, the customers.
Always sales. In any business, you're a salesperson, whether you like it or not, you are always selling. They say ABC, always be closing. You're always selling, right? So it doesn't matter where you are. If you're going to be in a CEO or if you're in any kind of business development role, you're always looking for the next deal. So you're looking for the next sale, the next deal, the next partnership. And for me, I'm a bit of a deal junkie. So that's the fun for me, the chase. So it's okay, let's go get this account. Let's go land this account. This is fun. So when you make it fun and you make it playful and you have to make money, so you have to close. You can't just be chasing deals just to chase deals, but you have that mindset and it's fun. I think it's fun. So when you have an enthusiasm for what you do, and I genuinely care about my clients and we are giving them a valuable product. So it's not like I'm selling them something they don't want. I'm selling them something they need and I'm making it affordable, approachable, friendly. And it becomes more of a partnership with your client than it is like a hard sell. And when you have a relationship-based sale, it's more meaningful. And your clients become part of your family. And that I learned from my very first job with American Express. The jobs that you have, you don't realize how they see you through life. But that form of customer service-based sales philosophy has served me well throughout my entire career.
Yeah. I'm wondering when you need to sell a lot, but in one point, you need to kind of step back and let somebody else sell. And you mentioned you like this approach, you like this part. How is it to let go and let somebody else do your work because you need to focus on other things?
That's hard. That's the hardest part because everybody sells differently. And even though it's the same company, the same products, everyone sells a little bit differently and they have their own style. And so you have to replicate yourself while giving others their independence in order to grow. And I think that's the biggest challenge I have right now is trying to teach the next generation how to sell and close, especially if sometimes they're too technical. So they don't understand the relationships and the relationship-based sale, or the ones that are really good at relationships don't have that level of technical knowledge that they need to get them the credibility to get them the sales. It's really difficult to find that highly motivated relationship-based technical salesperson. I think we're missing that in our skills development for our future workforce. I think that's something that should be taught in school.
It's called soft skills.
Yeah, well, soft skills, absolutely. And we don't have that. We don't teach sales the way that we need to. And if you don't have sales, you don't have a company, right? So I don't care all these incubators and accelerators and all the things in the world. If you can't sell to somebody your products and services, you don't have a company. And so duplicating your philosophy and your standards, you have to lead by example. So when they see you every day, then they see you, they see your values, they emulate you. But they have to be able to see you and they have to be able to realize that it's possible. So I will bring the juniors along and I'll sell and they can watch me sell. So they watch me sell and they're not even allowed to talk to a customer. So it's like, you sit there, junior, please, and watch and learn. And then when you're ready, then you can start the meeting and I'll be there to coach, right? I'll be there, but then you chair it and you go through and I'll coach you. And then you do it on your own. So once they're doing it on their own, then I'm the resource. And so usually it's that process and you might have to go through it a few times because sometimes they'll pick up some things and sometimes they won't and they'll pick it up in the next one. And then you just course correct as you go. But usually the best way to do it is on the job training and you just take them with you and do it and then they learn from you.
I think it's a very good approach, the entirety of mentorship. I think it was done in the past, I don't think I know. And we're sometimes missing this mentorship idea right now, even so people trying to bring it up and back. If you go back when you started the company, what would you do differently right now?
I wouldn't waste as much time looking for funding. I don't believe that angel investment or VC investment is possible in Canada. I don't believe that we have the level of sophistication that we need in order to bring truly great products to market. And I believed all of the accelerators and universities and all of the propaganda. And I spent too much time on pitch decks and trying to raise money from investors. So my advice and what I would have done differently is just not even looked at that as an option. It just doesn't exist in any kind of real form. If you want to raise capital, you go to the United States. That's like almost every company that I've talked to that has raised a significant amount of money has done it in the US. It hasn't happened in Canada. That is painful for me to have to say that out loud, because I believe in the ingenuity of the workforce of this country. And I think it's a real shame that our innovation is as broken as it is, and we're not funding it the way that we need to in order to be a world-class country. So the difference is, I would just say, don't even entertain that as an idea. It's not one that is realistic. Go to the States to raise capital, or do it through revenue, because if no one's going to pay you money for your ideas, you don't have a company, you have a hobby.
Great. We all have bad days, and we all need somehow to get back on the horse or recover. Some people meditate, some people run, gym, whatever it is. What do you do?
Oh, I go to the spa. So there's a Nordic spa in the mountains, and it's beautiful, and I'll spend a day there. And they have all kinds of plunge pools and steam rooms and saunas. And so that's really nice just for a down day. And then I have a group of women that I go hiking with in the mountains. So we'll do winter hiking, or we'll do summer hiking. And usually it's a half day to a full day. And it's, you know, a group of 8 or 10 of us are kind of regulars. And it's just friends, and we just hang out and we lift each other up, and that's how it goes. And when you work around motivated people and strong people, when you're down, they're up. When they're down, you're up. So you can
support. Like,
that's right. Yeah. You can't do it on your own. There's the world is just too big. You can't do anything all by yourself.
You were saying this and brought an idea to me about work-life balance. Does it actually exist when you're a CEO of a company, you have several multiple people you need to manage?
No, never. Nope, it's a way of life. And everybody in my world understands I'm a CEO, I'm an entrepreneur, and my work comes first always. And I learn to manage it. So there isn't a single day I take off. I always work every day. I just work more or less. And that's the way I've been since I was 20 years old. So I'll never change. And you just learn to manage. So you prioritize what needs to be prioritized. You put the work off. Your family needs you. You need to be with your family, and you need to be with your friends. But there's boundaries. So you be really clear on your boundaries. When there's work to be done, I'm working. So that means I'm not golfing. So if I can work off the golf course, then great. I can golf. Otherwise, I'm working. And that's just how it goes.
I have another question. Is it kind of related to work, but also related for how you envision? And it's about company values. We spoke about you hiring people that are very mature. You're a very mature person as well. Did you actually sit down with the team and build values for the company? Somebody ask what's important for the company, not just for you, but for the entire company. Maybe you write them down. Maybe just you know they are, but they were never written to nobody to ask.
We did go through and we did a vision and mission statement, but we haven't really done, this is our culture and here's a big board on the wall in the office. We haven't done that, but there is an agreement amongst the people when I onboard them. I vet them very carefully for their philosophies on a bunch of things. When I'm interviewing somebody to bring them into my mix of people, we talk about high quality standards. Customer satisfaction is paramount. Honesty and integrity, reliability, loyalty. Those are the values that project a good, sound business. And we practice what we preach. So you can't sell trust unless you have it within your ranks. And the core group of people I have are exceptional. And I'm very privileged, actually, and humbled to be with the people that I'm with now. They are quite great. And we all reflect the same values.
Thank you. We're going to switch topics. The people that are listening probably know we're talking about dark side right now. This is the time of the show when we talk about stuff that doesn't work. Basically, screwed ups and lessons we learned, because people that have been around understand it's not always pink. There's problems. There's failures. We can learn from failure and move on, or don't learn from them and move on. So tell me about some. Of course, don't disclose any names that you can share, and maybe what you learned from them.
Oh, there's been a lot. So whenever you launch something new, it never goes the way you think it'll go. Like we thought we were going to have a big lineup of people that would give us capital to build this secure communications tool that we wanted to do. We thought literally it was so great, and we were so excited that we thought everybody would be like, oh yeah, let me write a check and we could raise $1 million and get started like that. And crickets. It was rejection after rejection, and the common feedback was, wait till you've built the product and you're generating $1 million in sales, and then we'll look at investing in you. And then all the risk is gone out of that. So I guess my mistake was believing in venture capitalists and believing in angel investors. So I got a rude awakening because a lot of these people are my friends. These are people that I've worked with side by side in various capacities for over 20 years. So that was a mistake for me to believe that this existed in any kind of meaningful fashion. So I wouldn't, like I said, so I wouldn't do that again. I guess another mistake I made early on hiring contractors was the liability part, because I hired a bad contractor. And that contractor told me that they had skills that they didn't. And then when I put him on the client project, it became very apparent that person didn't have that skill set that they said they had. So I didn't do a good job enough of background checking and vetting, because after it came out that person couldn't do the job, then I had to salvage the project and bring somebody else in. And had I done a better job of vetting and background checking, I would have found out that this person has been going around from company, 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 saying that they have skills that they don't. And in fact, I had their former customers calling me to warn me and say, you got a bad apple there. Background check, background check, background check, reference check, reference check, reference check. Because at the end of the day, I'm liable for their activities. I found out that person was accused of hiring developers from India and other countries to do their job, and they actually had three full-time jobs and had a little, yes. So it was quite the scam. So it was quite disappointing because you want to believe in the good, but not everybody's good. So not to be so trusting. I never want to get to the point where I'm cynical and I don't believe in anybody. It's just like zero trust, like trust split, verify.
Thank you very much. Very, very interesting story and history. And I expect a lot of good future and good to work done for you in the future as well. So thank you very much for being here today.
Well, thank you very much for having me. And I really look forward to seeing you again and hopefully seeing you on the ski hill.
Sounds good. Everybody listening, thank you very much. See you in the next episode.